They will allow for a swap out. They told us, congratulations, you're going for the entire 6 months with no swap outs, and it really was not a any kind of voluntary activation from our end. So last year, whenever I was actually watching these great programs on the internet, I was over there stewing, wishing I was here instead of over there. But we were doing close air support, so all the coalition people on the ground. Unfortunately, you don't hear about it as much, but it's happening daily, and I guarantee it's happening over there now. With the drawdown, we still have American forces, coalition forces outside the wire, outside of these bases that are out there, and they need support. They need airplanes overhead, and that's what we were there to do. And of all my deployments, that one, bar none, was the most interesting one and the most employments that we did. So just between my flight alone, me and my wingman were over 40 combat employments. You know, we got to shoot the gun multiple times, which is always a hoot in combat as well. And just to be a part of that, it was an amazing experience. But we had several missions to where, you know, it made the difference on guys getting back to their families, and that's pretty gratifying.
How much latitude did you have in wanting to either, you know, shoot rockets, guns, drop bombs, and to what extent did KAOC, like in Qatar and so forth, control what you were able to do and why?
Well, we say that we need to add a second seat to the F-16 so we can carry the attorney with us, so we can pass the documents back and forth to make sure that you're legal before you push that button. So, it is part of being a fighter pilot is making decisions, but you have to be able to back those decisions up. But the rules are very specific over there now. I mean, obviously in that part of the world, you can't win the hearts and minds if you're hurting people that don't need to be hurt. So very restrictive on what we could do. However, when, you know, it got into some of these life or death situations with guys on the ground where they had to have people drop bombs. Fortunately for us, I mean, everything's precision now. So we did drop incredibly close to forces, which when you push that button, you're really hoping that the engineers got it right and that bomb goes where it's supposed to go, because nobody wants to find out that they hurt somebody that wasn't supposed to be when you get back. But, yeah, the rules are very, very specific and very restrictive. And that's one of the reasons we would, you know, shoot the gun, because it was sometimes it would just take too long to get through the approval process to drop, a higher class, 500-pound bomb.
John, up to your airplane. We've just heard him laud your airplane. Tell us about the Raptor. What's it designed to do? What does it do? What are your missions?
Well, the F-22's mission is air dominance. So it was originally designed to replace the F-15 back in the 1980s to be our premier air-to-air fighter. It is as a fifth-generation fighter, we talk about four specific things, and I'll explain all of them, but stealth, super cruise, integrated avionics, and then the superior maneuverability. So for the stealth, you can see the airplane. Everything on it was designed with stealth in mind. So the idea is to be able to engage the enemy long before and kill them long before they see you. Super cruise gives us the ability to gain and sustain supersonic speeds without afterburner. The engines are designed around it. They're optimized for fuel efficiency at Mach 1.5. It just gives us the ability to cover a lot more battle space and operate a lot farther apart from what we would traditionally employ as two ships in a close visual formation. The advanced integrated avionics piece is important as well. It allows us to fight far outnumbered than what other folks would, and the reason it does that is because it combines information from all the sensors on the airplane, and it builds track files, and it does so automatically. If the radar sees an airplane, it'll go out and test some other sensors to find out more about that airplane. And as the jet starts to build tracks, we look at a god's eye view of the battle space, as opposed to historically where you have a radar display over here, maybe radar warning over here, and you'd have and maybe a tactical data link, and you're building those pieces, putting those all together in your own brain to build a battle space picture. And the Raptor does that for you, and that's a force multiplier for sure. And then finally, the maneuverability of the airplane. It's the only operational jet fighter that we have in the Air Force or in the U.S. Military right now with thrust vectoring engines, and it's a completely fly-by-wire flight control system with very large flight control surfaces that just give the ability to maneuver the airplane, the ability to maneuver in ways that that seem to defy physics.
To what extent you say it's all fly-by-wire? Have you seen or experienced anything where the fly-by-wire, the electronics, went awry and forced you to have to make decisions that you would not normally have to make if everything's working right?
You know, there's no manual backup at all. So the stick, to pull the stick back, it takes 43 pounds. Why? I guess because the engineers thought so. And all that force just sends an electrical signal to the flight controls that says, I want to pitch up. So it's there's three different computers. They're all making decisions. They're voting on what one another thinks. But without those computers, the airplane just wouldn't be flying. So there'd be one way you'd be flying that silk parachute down to the ground if anything happened there. So as far as the way the system works, though, it's pretty spectacular. The flight control laws that that the jet is designed around know about the airflow, speeds, all that goes into the computers, and they help make their decisions. So for normal level crews, if I move the stick to the side, I get ailerons deflecting. But as I start to get higher in alpha, even maneuvering post-stall, all bets are off. So the jet might know that one rudder is completely washed out. So to save hydraulic forces, it's only going to move one, the one that it knows is actually going to see the forces in the wind stream. So it can yaw the airplane using differential movements of the stabs. It's just really impressive.
Is all that electronics as fabulous as you describe, but does it also require so much concentration that you can be thrown off broader picture challenges in any way?
You know, the engineers did a really nice job. When we, as part of the being on the demonstration team, I actually go and get to talk to some of those folks that worked on the flight control system of the airplane. And we practice some emergency situations that could possibly get us in trouble close to the ground doing the demo. And in doing so, I've been able to talk to those folks, and sometimes we give them a hard time. The airplane has the gun is on one side. As you can all see, there's a rectangular door over the right wing root up there. When you take off, the airplane just has this ever so slight roll to the right, and it's because the gun is over there. So that they want the airplane to have this natural feel to it that it wouldn't have if they didn't do such a good job with designing the flight control. So you'd be hard-pressed to fly something with a manual flight control system and go fly this airplane and know that it's different.
Well, Mike, you started smiling when he started talking about the electrical system. How much can you tell us about the electrical system on the airplane? Really close.
Yep. Okay. The electrical system on this aircraft... when we was first starting to design it, it took a lot of the new technology, plus we was also pushing the envelope at the time of what the technology was out there. And to get all the different systems and the different companies that was developing these systems to talk together under the same language was one of the biggest challenges that we had. To be able to integrate it and set up the electronics so that way the pilot didn't have to worry about it. A lot of the ideas here was to take a lot of the work that the pilot has to do to maintain the airplane, take that away from him and let the electronics handle that part so that way he can concentrate on his mission. And that was the whole idea about the Raptor, was to make it much easier for the pilot to do what he has to do to be able to accomplish his mission.
So how satisfied are you and you, John, that you've accomplished that with this airplane?
I'm very pleased with it. I'm very happy because since I worked on it, yeah, I'm happy. We were tied in with a lot of electronics, the structures and the LO and everything about the aircraft and what we was doing. And there were so many different groups within Lockheed and any other businesses that was working with us to try. And just as soon as we set up one side of the electronics and it was working fine, then when we go to integrate something else, then we'd have to try. And it's a lot of give and take, just like in designing the aircraft. You've got your aerodynamic people that says, no, you can't put that there because it's going to interfere with the aircraft. And then you got your LO people that says, no, because, that's going to cause other kinds of problems. So it was a lot of give and take until we actually came up with the configuration we have now. But we're very pleased with the aircraft.
John, you mentioned the gun on the right side. What are the weapons? What are there other weapons besides the gun?
Absolutely. Being the air-to-air fighter that it is, it was designed to carry six AMRAAMs, which is the AIM-120. It's our medium-range radar-guided air-to-air missile. So it can carry six of those as well as two AIM-9s, and that would be an all-air-to-air configuration. You can give two of those AMRAAMs away and carry a 1,000-pound bomb or a rack of four small-diameter bombs, the GBU-39. So it can carry up to eight of those, if we so choose, or two 1,000-pound bombs, but in the all-air-to-air loadout, it's eight missiles and the gun.
So it is a genuine fighter bomber, right?
Well, we have a we would call it an air-to-air fighter with a ground attack capability. So we, unlike airplanes that do close air support that can actually look at ground-moving targets or get talk-ons, anything like that, I don't have the ability to look and see with a targeting pod what I'm actually dropping on the ground. I only drop coordinate-seeking GPS-guided weapons.
Have you, Ray, have you ever dogfought, or whatever the term is, with a F-22?
Yes, we have. In fact, last month we went out to Nellis, and we were dedicated support for the weapons school for the guys that were going through the weapons school at Nellis in the F-22. So it's fun to go do that, just to see this airplane and what it can do. It's also fun to hear the guys when they talk about how they shot a Raptor and all that, but we all know that if that happened, it's basically, you know, it's a 20-to-1 type thing, and it's this airplane is amazing. So when you start talking about the LO, low observation, we just don't see it on the radar, and that's a good thing. I'm glad we own them, and that's the whole intent, that when we go to war against someone else, they won't see it either, and they'll come through and just basically mow down all the people that that don't need to be flying. But it is amazing to dogfight, to see, and, you know, we cannot several of the missions that we go out and go fly with the airplane, again, I can't tell you how amazing it is to watch the airplane in the air and to see what the capability is over the F-16.
Ray, did you have other tape? Did you bring other tape from your Afghanistan missions, or was that all shown earlier?
Well, whatever the Air Force had, we provided to them, and that was that's pretty much what we had for that.
Right. Mike, back to you. When you think about this technology, when did you start designing or being part of the design team with electrical systems on airplanes?
About 15 years ago is when I got involved with the Raptor. And I actually got involved with the structures first and then got tied in as we started developing, started modifying and doing more stuff to the Raptor. I'm actually doing more in structures and other parts of the aircraft than I am electrical anymore. Right. But at the time that I got involved, again, we was trying to get everything working together and talking in the same language, also to get it set up to where we can give more information to the pilot so that way he understands what's going on.
Jim, we started with the bird dog, and now we're talking about the Raptor and what it's capable of doing. I mean, this is almost a history in the last 40 years of military aviation, from one extreme to another.
Right. The aircraft that I flew, the F-8 Crusader and the A-4 Skyhawk and A-7 Corsair and, of course, the Bird Dog, I mean, we couldn't even spell GPS. So, I mean, it, you know, was non-existent. So the technology that Ray sees and the technology that John sees is just fantastic.
So what were you flying in Afghanistan? Because you weren't on active duty, were you?
No, sir. I volunteered. I was asked to volunteer to go fly with the basically Department of Defense, 101st Airborne is who I was attached to. And I volunteered to go fly MC-12s, which are King Air 350s, had all the super secret stuff in the back that that we used and worked directly with our ground troops over there. So it was a very rewarding.
John, you talked about